Welcome to, there was a little joke in the lobby from before we started involving nose picking, but welcome to the August 5th edition of the TMS Wiki's book discussion group. This week we are discussing Nicole Sachs LCSW's book, The Meaning of Truth. Today we are discussing chapters 1 and 2, as well as the introduction. If it takes us a little bit longer, if we don't get through all of it, that's fine. We are interested in bringing up anyone's questions. Speaking of questions, they make the podcast so much more interesting, so feel free to ask them. We will want to keep them on topic. We want to focus this on the book, so this is essentially a book discussion group. Later on, if we have time, though, we can open it up to a wider variety of questions. The one thing I need to say before we start is that this is just a peer discussion group. We are all people who have suffered with chronic pain or various other symptoms that we assume or that we interpret as mind-body. So if you have a medical or mental health concern, make sure to see a licensed professional in a professional relationship. That this is hopefully going to be a wonderful discussion, but it can't substitute for a practitioner who is giving you professional advice. Here. Indeed. With that, let us begin. The first topic I wanted to talk about is the meaning. This is kind of funny. The meaning of truth. So you essentially, I mean, the concept of truth is key to your book. And I also want to say to everyone, if you have a specific question that you want to ask during the call, feel free to jump in. I'm just starting out with my own questions, and I encourage Herbie and other callers.
And I also want to say something that I didn't know that you just said in the lobby part, that if you have a question, apparently there's a flag you can hit so that, oh, there, I see it, so that we know you have a question, because I think people get shy, and then they wait for the perfect time, and then they don't ask the question. So if you have a question, put the flag up, and I guess either Herbie or Forrest will know, you know, to be like, you know, right?
Absolutely. Correct. And if you're a caller, just jump on in. We want to hear your question. So do not be shy. I will try to pause, but don't wait for the pauses. Jump on in. It'll take a little bit of assertiveness on your part because the conversation tends to roll along, but assertiveness is a great skill to practice, and this is a safe place to do it, so jump on in. But getting back to, pardon me, the meaning of truth, could you, the concept of truth is absolutely central to the book, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Basically, it's interesting that one of the first things that occurred to me when I wanted to write this book was how I was going to talk about something that was so confusing. Because the word truth, I mean, my goodness, it just means a different thing to every single person. It's in every song lyric. It's in biblical texts. It's in regular texts. It's ubiquitous, but it's also different for everybody. And so my first instinct was I had to start talking about definitions, which I know, I believe, because like I said, I've read it a zillion times. I forget where chapter 2 ends and the rest begins, but I think it's the first two chapters that I talk about definitions and how we all as human beings define everything based on our experiences. And I like to tell my clients that, you know, each of us has this lens and we're born with it to some extent, and then we're raised to nurture it more fully. And whenever something's said to us, it needs to be filtered through that lens, and then it comes to us. So when I say truth, it's going to go through each of your lenses, and it's going to be different for every one of us. And so I started off with defining things and defining how we can look at our world so that we can heal. Because, I mean, in the end, if you have TMS of any sort, mind-body syndrome, tension myositis syndrome, PPD, all of these things are really just the ways our brains are trying to quote-unquote protect us and not let us feel our deepest, most painful emotions. And that's truth. So, you know, the best way I can answer that question, and I'm sure we'll get much more deeply into it, is truth exists on two levels. Okay, so I always say it's funny because for my phone, if any of my just plain phone clients are on the line, which I at least I know at least one of them is because I know what her name is, I do this all the time, but now you get to watch. Okay, truth exists on two levels. We got this. Okay, that's the that's Earth. That's the life you live. Your kids, your family, your job, your BS that you deal with every day. Okay, that's your truth. Then
So,
there
for the
is a
benefit of people who are
deeper.
hearing the recording, which may actually be a substantial people proportion of the people who are reaching, can you describe?
What I'm doing?
Yeah, just because I laughed, I feel guilty if we don't have some sort of explanation, like we missed it.
Okay, so my arm is up like as flat as it gets because my sweatshirt's too big, okay? And then I am walking across my arm like a flat surface and like my two fingers are feet. Walking across the way you would take your two fingers and like walk across something. That's the best way I can describe it.
Perfect.
And what I'm saying is that's the surface truth, okay? This is the truth that exists in our days in our lives every day. So it's, like my husband's annoying, my kids are driving me crazy, my boss is a jerk, we don't have enough money to pay the bills, okay? There are a million truths out there that stress us, right? But then there is, and now I'm underneath my arm, walking kind of in air. There is a deeper truth to every single thing that we say. So when I say, if you say that one more time, you're driving me crazy, you're annoying me. Yes, you are annoying me, but there's a deeper truth. Like, I'm scared I can't pay the bills and I can't talk to you about that. Or, somebody really hurt my feelings today at work and I'm too embarrassed. I don't know how to bring it up. Or something deep, like really deep. Like I have deep depression and I'm scared to tell you. I have a drug problem. I'm gay. Whatever it is in your life, there could be a deeper truth to it that people need help getting to. And that's what I'm talking about when I define truth, that we live on a certain plane, and that plane is important, but it's also important to excavate our deeper truths and have safety and have efficacy in connecting people with their deeper truths so they can heal.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any follow-up questions about that? Anything you want clarified or thoughts on that? Kirby?
The deeper truths. Hey, that's where the pain is. Well, that's what generates the pain. I understand what Nicole's saying, and what I got from last week is we're going to walk through this, and we're going to reveal. Unlayer the layers as we go through it so that everybody that's listening can finally get and understand what this TMS is, And basically what Nicole just said is one of the first layers. I mean, most people hear that. She's telling them she wants them to know the truth. And most people hear that and they're still like, they're sitting there and they're thinking, I still don't get it. It's sort of like the person that says, yeah. But what do you mean? Can you tell me in another way, and another way, and another way? And hopefully we'll start, peeling back those layers as
Yeah,
we get
it's
on into
hard.
chapter
It's
two here.
so hard, and that's why I labored on how to present this book. And some people have told me it spoke to me more than any book I've ever read in my life. And some people told me, "Oh my God, get to the point already." And that's and Eric, the reason that I labored so hard on how to put it out there is because I didn't want to just boom, throw it at people and then say, "Oh, the truth, I know the truth. I know who I am." So I had to almost present the arguments. And Dr. Sarno is the one who taught me that because over the 5 years that I sat on that alumni panel, people asked the questions and everybody was just really, really, they were confused and they were really a bit adversarial sometimes with him because they felt comfortable because he was the big doctor. And he was always so patient. And he was always like, just sit with it and think about it. And, denial of the syndrome is part of the syndrome. And I kind of took a page from his repertoire when I wrote the book.
Yeah. When I was reading your chapter two earlier, Nicole, it's like this, and I can pretty much, hopefully, out of these couple paragraphs that came from your chapter two, hopefully, a lot of people here get what we're meaning by the truth, what you're meaning by the truth. And if you don't care, I'm going to, well, this is the book discussion, so I'm going to read it right from your own words. On page 37, you say, I have begun to learn who I am as a result of uncovering and accepting many of my own deepest truths. And then on page 38, you say, not the BS story of me I had created and I put griped about to my friends endlessly over the years. See, and let me go on. Not the shoulds I've embodied as spoken by my parents or the mean girl at school or the seemingly disapproving world. See right there, guys, she's telling you right there, it's all these layers of the shoulds and people that's, you think all these self-imposed things that's put on you throughout your life is you and who you really are, but really when you take all of that away, that's not who you really are. Can you elaborate some on that, Nicole?
I really can, actually. Eric, that is so wise. And I think that that is something that is so important because I work with clients every day and I can't tell you, you know, it's like the whole joke, if I had a dime every time somebody said like, well, I shouldn't do that. Or I feel that, but I shouldn't feel that. Or I believe that, but I shouldn't believe that. Or everyone's going to think I do this if I'm this. And I mean, here's the thing, and I don't 100% know if this is in the first two chapters, but I'll just say my stuff and we'll always get back to it. But, you know, I like to say, if that tree falls in the forest, even if you're not going to admit it made a noise, it made a noise, okay, because it falls within you. So if I say, well, you know, let's give a really easy example, the mean girl at school. If I say, you know, I don't like her or I hate her or, you know what, I don't believe what she says or I'm not going to be part of her clique. If I say that to somebody else, that's being true. That's being brave. But most times you say, oh, no, well, she's the coolest, whatever. But if you don't actually feel it, just because you should say it, if you don't actually feel it, you are going to hurt anyway. And that pain needs to go somewhere. That's where TMS is born, when we're young, when we think we can't speak our minds, when we think our parents will kill us, our friends won't like us, you know, people won't accept us. That's not how you should be. That's when it's born, and we don't understand that if that tree is falling, if we go to bed at night and there's somewhere deep down inside us, we know what's true for us and it's not who we're being. That is where it starts to build and build. As Dr. Sarno says, it becomes at critical mass when it reaches the top of our reservoir of rage. And I like to say not just rage, but guilt, shame, embarrassment, fear, you know, any number of things. And then you're reaching for a plate and you're like, ow, I wrenched my shoulder reaching for a plate. People are like, how did you really do that? And you're like, I don't know. It's amazing. It's incredible. I reached for the plate and I can't move my shoulder and it's frozen. And I've heard these stories. I've been doing this for so long. And it's just something that I think as people start, the more we hear it, the more people start to get it and be like, maybe this is worth looking at.
So is the solution to, is it about self-acceptance? Is it about, you know, recognizing these feelings and being mindful of them and accepting that you have those feelings? Is that where it goes? And if not, what is it?
Well, Forrest, I think that that is, but that's like way down the line. Like if we're going to comment, and let me refer to the text, that part comes in chapter 9 and it's called patience and kindness for yourself. Self-acceptance is wonderful.
I see.
Until we really go dirty and gross and excavate the, you know, Eric, I'm not going to swear. The crap.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. That's your truth, Nicole.
We all know.
Hold back your truth. You know what I'm saying? Because I accept that, and that's great. What makes so many people like you. Because you're real. You're just telling them the truth. And even if they don't like it, you're still revealing that, whatever it is about yourself. So you don't have to hide it no more, you know? And that's what everybody's getting at. So many of us has got things we're trying to hide from everybody, you know? And when we can just sit there and say, hey, this is me, and I'm not afraid to go out there and do whatever I want to do, and I'm not afraid of what the boss is. Well, sometimes we got to be a little afraid of what the boss is going to think, but I'm not afraid of what everybody's going to think about me all the time. Then you're starting to peel back those layers and you're starting to reveal your own truth. And you gotta be like that little puppy dog with the Superman shirt on. You gotta stand up, you know, and know that you're beautiful. You're grand just the way you are. Even if you was born in this world, like you said in chapter 2, with warts and all, you're still beautiful. You're beautiful. You're the only one in this world like you. You know.
I don't mean to interrupt. I want to say one thing about that, though, because, Eric, I think here to that, and actually, you know, I really, in the end, believe that that is the ultimate in healing when you have any sort of a TMS-related disorder. But something that used to come up constantly on the panels, and I think it's really important to say now, is you can be that little dog with the Superman, but you could have it all inside. You don't need to tell anybody. You don't need to stand up to your boss. I often find that people end up wanting to after they have revealed it to themselves and really accepted whatever it is about themselves. You know, there was this one guy who used to sit on the panel with us, and he had this horrible, debilitating, like, back pain. He couldn't even lift his baby. He's probably a few years older than me, so maybe he's in his late 40s, early 50s, and he used to say that he was embarrassed because he used to have to, when his wife left the baby with him, he would play fetch with his own baby. He would sit on the couch and throw a toy and be like, go get it, and the baby would crawl because he was embarrassed and ashamed that he didn't pick up the baby because he couldn't. And he said that it all came down to that he hated his business partner in the end, you know, once we really peeled over all the layers, and he felt that this guy had really done him wrong. And it was like he needed to figure it out for himself. He eventually decided to sever the business relationship because that was what's true to him in his decision. But one thing that people used to raise their hand all the time is and say, but wait a second, I can't quit my job. I don't want to divorce my wife. I don't want to kill my kids. I mean, kind of, but I'm not going to do it, you know? And so I always want to say and want to tell people, because it's so imperative in understanding this concept, you don't have to do anything. You just have to see inside yourself without fear. And oftentimes it takes the help of a therapist because you need a mirror. You need somebody to say, I hear you. You're okay. You can say, you know, those dirty, ugly things that you think no one can hear. I hear you and I think you're okay. But the thing is that people don't have to change. And that is something that I get asked constantly, and so I just wanted to make sure to just throw it out there that if you yourself can see inside yourself, write it in a journal, keep it, you know, with a therapist that you trust, even if it's a decently good friend that you know you can trust, it's not about changing, it's about seeing, and that's chapter 3. But anyway, sorry, go on.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What I gathered basically is, you know, you got to get those layers back, and when you finally do get down to the truth, then you can start, you know, meditating and doing all the yoga and everything else, and then it just add to it and make it better. But until you get down to the truth, until you pull back all those layers and face the world for who you really are and stop all the fear, you know, that's pretty much the direction we're going in right now, right? That's the way to heal.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And I don't want to scare people, but to be truly healed, to really carry on with peace, I agree with you, Eric. That is, it. We can't skip this part. This is the part. This is the core, you know, if like you picture when you're little and you learn about the earth and the earth has a core, this is the core of the earth. You know, there's many, many layers to the earth that are important, and without them, we couldn't live on the earth. But there is a core, and I do believe that finding our truth is that core.
Well, you know, I know it goes a lot deeper than what I'm fixing to say, but when Lance Armstrong came out and he finally admitted to doping, when he finally admitted to doping, and he'd already beat like 1,000 drug tests. But, and then he just came out and he admitted to the doping. And everybody, you know, he's got Live Strong and so many, like a million followers on that. And it blowed me away. I love Lance Armstrong. I still do. And I love him even more that he came out and actually said what he said. I know it's not right what he did. But anyway, I remember what he told the person that he was telling the truth to. He said, I'm glad. I feel so much pressure. I'm so happy that I finally got this out.
Yes.
That I was finally able to get this out of me, the truth, basically, you know, because it was killing
really,
him that it was
evaded it for a long time. You're right.
He did.
Peeing for him. It was crazy. I agree with you. I did see that interview. I believe it was with Oprah, I think, because, you know, Oprah, she gets everyone.
Yeah, she's
but I have to tell you, it's interesting that you bring that up because I'm not such a pop culture person. I don't watch TV a lot, but I saw that. And I agree with you completely. I remember watching him and being like, good for you, man. It's time. Everyone knows. It's so obvious. Just say it. And that's kind of what my stuff is that I write about and that I preach. But I just, like I said, you don't have to say it on Oprah. You could just say it to yourself.
yeah, and you know, again, I just at first, you know, I just couldn't believe that he had beat all those drug tests, and why would you say it now? But now, you know, that I've done recovered from, you know, well, TMS is a lifelong thing, but at the same time, the pain's gone, you know. So now that I know the truth, what we're talking about here, now that I know how to get to that truth, now that I understand what holding stuff in can do to me, I know there's no money in the world that would want you to hold that in, because you're dying on the inside, you know. I mean, it emotionally, it was just killing him. So it was a powerful scene. But anyway, thanks. That was a good elaboration there, Nicole. Forrest, you want to say anything, buddy?
Sure. I thought that was an excellent point. Yeah, thank you for presenting that so compellingly. I mean, it seems like one thing that one often hears from the TMS therapist is there are fundamental issues and we have to get to the bottom of them. And so, yeah. One quote that I love comes from chapter one. You're talking about expectations. And you say, expectations kill us every day of our lives. You know why? Because nothing is ever as good as we expect, literally. And I think this speaks a lot to what fuels perfectionism and goodism and other aspects of the TMS personality. And I was just wondering if you could comment a little bit on that. And I would also be curious if any of the callers, A, have any questions that they want for her to expand upon. The mics are open, so everyone can just jump right in. And if they also have any experiences of expectations.
Do you want me to wait to answer the question until people chime in, or what do you think?
Yeah, let's give people a chance, see if they want to jump in.
I want to say a little bit about, you know, what expectations did to me. Wow. That's one thing about a perfectionist, a goodist, whatever you want to call us, the people that's got TMS. To me, I think the whole world has it. But anyway, I know everybody ain't got it. But if you're a perfectionist, you're expecting good things to happen. And when they don't, it tears you up on the inside. Gosh, I couldn't tell you the times that I wanted to, you know, to do the perfect job for somebody, and just because they didn't like one little thing about it, and they said it was okay, on the inside it was killing me. It was just tearing me to pieces, you know. I wanted to play the perfect guitar tune, and I've played guitar for almost 25 years. But whenever somebody would sit in front of me to watch me play that guitar, I just knew in my mind that I wasn't going to play the perfect tune. So I would never play the guitar in front of people. But on the inside, Forrest, Nicole, that was eating me up because I'd played my whole life so other people could hear the beauty of it. But then when it was time and people would sit down, I expected so much of myself, I would not perform the art. And it would just eat me up on the inside even more. And I could go on and on and on for a long time about these expectations, but I think it goes into every form of your life throughout the day.
It runs really deep. I mean, I can take it to minutiae that you don't even it, you know, I wake up in the morning and I go to the grocery store, and I was really polite to the clerk who is checking out my groceries, and she was just a bitch. And now I'm like, what did I do wrong? I don't deserve that, you know? And this is the kind of stuff. I'm hearing an echo, just saying. Moderate
men. Just muted them. Yep. Keep going.
Okay. And I am like, who cares about her? I mean, not who cares about her life. I'm just saying, like, her life has nothing to do with my life. Just because I'm a super nice person and I wanted to smile and be polite to her, if she's like, whatever, and she's just throwing my stuff, I could get back pain from that. See, this is what I'm saying. And I really respect what Eric said, because there are things like that where, you know, you just really deeply have a talent that maybe your mom or your dad said, you know, well, not until you're perfect, or your teacher or your coach or whatever. And so you said, well, you know, and Eric, I'm going to do it because you said, yeah. Fuck it then. I'm not going to do it at all. And what
well,
I'm saying
truth,
is
so,
that stuff... That stuff will eat away at you, but believe it or not, from my years of practice, some of the stuff that gets people are the small things. Why wasn't she nice to me? I was nice to her. I was polite. I went out of my way to get off my cell phone and to pay attention to her and to pay my bill, and she was just a total bitch to me. People can get into a back spasm or a neck or a fibromyalgia attack or an IBS attack or a migraine attack. I mean, I can go on and on, because I'm with you, Eric. It's everywhere. It's pervasive. And I know it to be true, so it's a little hard because I get all passionate. But what I'm saying is that the little things, and it just, and it's whatever it is that made you who you are. Our parents, they were nice, they were okay, but, you know, they kind of screwed us up. They made us feel like we had to be this way or that way. They made us, you know, and when I say this, and my mother is on the line, Mom, I'm not specifically talking about you guys. I'm just saying that it's everybody's parents, and it's all the time, and it's the smallest, stupidest little shit that gets us going. You know, I have a client who I know isn't on the line, so I can say this, who was at Thanksgiving dinner when she was 12, and her second cousin, who she sees once a year, was like, hey, yo, looks like you're, you know, putting on some weight. And when I got her, she weighed 92 pounds and she was almost dead. And by the way, now she's like fabulous and she's awesome. It's like 3 years later. But I guess I want to say, it took me 6 months to get to that dinner. And finally, one day, in tears and with shame, she looked at me and she said, he said, I got a belly. And I'm like, you were what, 12? And she's like, yeah. And as soon as she said that, I said, that's fucking ridiculous. You were 12 years old. Your body was changing. You were probably not looking at how you were sitting. Maybe you were slouching. It doesn't matter. And she was like, he was like, I'm not a disgusting fat mess. And I was like, no. And like, as soon, that was the first day of her recovery. And it was very quick after that that she got it, that she is not wrong and bad, that she is not a shameful mess because of that cousin who's, and that guy probably has no idea what he did to her, because it's us. This is why the truth must come from within us, because nobody is going to apologize. You know, my biggest problem is my dad, and we've made up since he died, but he died when I was 27, and I'm going to be 43 next May. So I can't have a conversation. I mean, I have plenty of conversations with him, but I mean, he can't sit here and answer me back, not exactly like that. And so it's like, we need to recover within us, because we're not always going to get help. But actually, it's sometimes helpful that he's dead, because I've got clients whose alive parents won't come out and apologize, and then it hurts worse. Because they're like, oh, well, great, you know, so I must be such a failure. And these things need to be eradicated, and this can all happen within finding our truth.
That's beautiful.
Awesome.
Wow.
Thank you.
That was the truth, guys. Hey, it might get ugly, you know, but it's the truth. And that's, hey, you know, there's a famous saying, the truth will set you free, you know, and that's what she's saying right here. Has anybody got any questions for Nicole?
Come on, people, help me out.
Somebody yell something out here. Join us.
Nicole, I can say something.
Awesome.
I watched your interview with Forrest. This is North Star, by the way, and I've got three kids. Hi there. Anyway, when I read in there your admission of I hate my daughter, I was like, oh my gosh, how this is horrible, volcanic. And I know enough now that when I have any kind of reaction to something, close to something.
Yes.
It struck a nerve with me. So anyway, I devoured your book in a day. It was fabulous.
Thank you.
And I want you to know I really appreciated your candor so much that I've been having some issues with my teenage daughter lately. So I posted a cute photo of her, one of her sweetest photos when she was 3 years old. I've got it on my iPod, and I showed my girlfriends this morning. I said, see this sweet little face? And they're like, oh. I said, I've got it there to remind me not to kill her.
That's great.
But anyway, I want you to know how much I appreciate it, your candor. Because
Thank
there's
you.
A lot of dark places as a parent that you
yeah.
go through. And instead of and the shame, because we're into this dualistic thinking of, well, that's bad.
Right.
Instead of going, you know, this is part of who I am, and it's okay. It's all part of the package. And of course, I don't hate my kids any more than you hate it your daughter.
Right.
But these feelings.
Of course you don't. But you got to say it to get past it.
Yeah, and to be okay with it, to realize. I've been enamored lately with Richard Rohr. He's actually a Catholic priest. And he talks about how religion in particular makes this divide, this dualistic thinking, this is good, this is bad.
Yeah.
And he refers to it, he says a lot of times in religion what they do is instead of saying, this is your shadow, this is just part of the good stuff that you have, you've got your shadow, but we've called it sin. So we're busy trying to hide this quote sin instead of saying, you know, it's just our shadow, and it's part of who we are, and it's okay.
Shadow versus sin, I think, just because sin has so much shame attached, and shadow could just be, you know, you look behind you, there it is. It's with all
Absolutely.
Of us.
Absolutely. It's there, but I'm okay with it. I'm okay with my dark side.
And I can accept it.
They call it the devil. They call it the devil, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. So anyway, all that to say, I really appreciated how you got down to the nitty-gritty in your book. It gave me courage. I did some angry, you know, in one spot you say to go to Starbucks and buy your $20 coffee drink and fill up the legal pads. And, coming up. So anyway, thank you.
Well, you're very, very welcome. And I'm gonna quickly, I see that Ellen raised her flag, and Ellen, I want to have your question next, but I want to say quickly response to what North Star said, because, you know, it's like this day, personally, just to let you know how much it means to me, brings back my days on the panel where I got the opportunity and the privilege to speak to people who were like-minded and trying to get their lives together. And it was an absolute privilege, and the panel members and I all felt the same way. So I want to thank you for that, first of all. And I want to say something that I used to say back then that is so profound. And because you brought up my daughter, I need to say it. And if she's still on the call, there's a woman named Liz who knows deeply about what I'm about to say, which is, figuring out how I felt about Isabella, who is now going to be 12 in October, was not only to cure my TMS, which pretty much that was my big secret, that I didn't like being a mom after all the years of deciding that the only thing I wanted to do was be a mom. But figuring out that I hated a two-year-old child opened me up, and I write this in the book, but it is so profound to me to love her so completely. And as a result, I have the most banging kick-ass kid. You have no idea. She is awesome. She loves me so much, because every time I tried to hate her for me, I said, stop it. That's not about her. That's about your bullshit. don't do that to her. And I didn't. And she loves me, and she isn't subservient. We laugh, and she tells me her opinions about things, and she's still the same pain in the ass she was when she was two, but I love her for exactly who she is. And now I get the joy of being a mother of an almost teenager who, when she's being a little off, I can look at her and I can be like, seriously? And she's like, like, and we can laugh about it because she trusts me and because she loves me back because I've shown her such respect. And when we have a moment where she's being disrespectful, which is so rare, and I know she's only almost 12, so I know it's coming. But I will tell you, when we have a moment and she's being disrespectful, I look at her and I go, hey, do you see how hard I work? Do you see that I'm in it with you? Do you see that I'm toeing the line just as much as you? And she looks straight at me and she goes, yes, I do, mommy. And I said, then get in the shower and do your homework and clean your room. And I don't want to hear one more thing. And she goes, all right. But I have only that beauty because I have established the kind of trust that can only come with respecting my truth. So I don't give it like a disease over to her the way my dad did to me. And it wasn't fair. And I'm 42 and I'm still battling that perfectionistic thing. And I will never do that to her. And I already can see that the buck stops here. And no matter what crap that I have to deal with in her upbringing, it will be hers, not mine. And I cannot say that enough, that curing your TMS and curing your pain is only the first gift of this process. The second is you get to have an awesome life. And you get to be a full human being. And you get to invite the others in your life to be part of that. And there is no price. There's no price tag you put on that.
Man, that is super. And she's telling the truth, guys, because be honest with you, I feel like Superman most of the time. And most of my life. Now, we all have, you know, we all still get emotions, and we all still human, but at the same time, I'm not afraid to do the things I want to do anymore. I play that guitar now in front of everybody. I'm not scared to break that guitar. I'm not scared to do anything I want to do. I get it, but every time before I do anything in front of a lot of people, I have a little emotions, but I do it. I'm not afraid to do whatever I want to do, to live my life to the full now, and that's the beauty of peeling back the layers. That's the beauty of getting rid of all that junk, you know? One of the things you mentioned, Nicole, if Forrest don't mind, I'm going to go into it.
Are we good North with Star- Ellen's question? I don't mean to interrupt, but I did say that I was going to answer it. Ellen,
yeah,
are
go
you
ahead.
Good?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's all right. I can wait.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Ellen, go ahead. I've got it written down. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, just getting back to what you said about uncovering your deeper truth, and I was wondering, how do you know that what you uncover is the truth? Because sometimes I think I'm really good at, my brain is really good at coming up with things that sound good or could logically be the truth, but I'm not really sure if that's it or not.
Okay, that's an excellent question. Here is the best way that I can describe this. Have you ever had one of those days where you're driving your car, you're doing something like, you know, somewhat mindless, not completely mindless, hopefully, and you're feeling like kind of bad about something, something doesn't feel right to you, and so you say to yourself, well, at least I've been doing this since I was young, kind of like, what is it? You know, what is it? What was it? You know, why am I feeling crappy? What is it? And you kind of go through the Rolodex in your mind and you say, oh yeah, I know why. It was because I picked up, you know, my kid and that mom, she just shunned me like that. Or like whatever, I'm picking random anything. And there's sometimes, and I do this with my clients, where they seem to have like a problem and they're bringing it to me, Ellen, in the way that you're bringing it. And I say to them, all right, I'm going to just do my Google map and I'm going to pan out and then I'm going to come back to you and then I'm going to give you a list and you tell me what feels the rightest without using a word that isn't a word because I know it's not a word. Dad. There you go. My perfectionism. So what's the rightest? And usually, if we are open and we aren't trying to be defensive because we're in a safe place, which, Ellen, that's part of the answer to your question, which you need to be in a safe place. We can say to ourselves, once we kind of look through that list, that's it. That's the one. That's what's making me feel like shit. It was that I walked into that mommy's group and so-and-so didn't speak to me, or that I opened my Facebook and so-and-so didn't like what I had to say. And it could sound so stupid to you that you could be like, I'm embarrassed to even say it out loud. That's the thing. That's the one. Does that help you?
It does. And I think especially with things that are happening currently, but I was wondering about when you're going back to kind of old things in childhood, where sometimes we have to assume what your parents were thinking or doing. And I don't know, I come up with these logical explanations for things that I'm not really sure if that's truth or not.
I can relate to that, absolutely, where there are things that I've dug up, and yeah, I don't know how much, is that the important thing, or am I just making that up? I get you on that.
Exactly.
Well, you know, here's what I'll say to that, okay? There isn't one truth to Forrest and to Ellen and to anybody else who's asking this question. There's a million. And there are definitely ones that when you strike upon them, you're like, wow, that's a biggie. But there's also smaller ones that matter too. So what I will say to you is, don't judge yourself for something you're probably doing that's part of the problem in the first place. And just peacefully, kindly, and gently look through what you need to look through that you're looking at and say, and you know what? Okay, I'm going to give a really kind of dark example, but you know, it's what I'm all about, that I think will be helpful. Okay. So, I'm 42, which means I was born in 1972, and right about 1985, there was that horrible, horrible scandal that came about with the daycare, abusive children and the devil worshiping, and it was horrible. It was right when daycare laws started to be changed and actually regulated. And I'm sure anybody around my age range remembers that national news about just these horrors that, you know, anyone on their backyard could have a daycare. And anyway, it was in the 80s. And when I was younger, I wasn't sexually abused by a babysitter, but something messed up happened, which, of course, I'm happy to tell you, but let's not waste the time. And I didn't get touched or touch this person, but he made me very uncomfortable. And I had the darkest day where I laid in my bed, and I think I was a freshman or a sophomore in college, and I wanted to, I was like, am I blocking it out? Did he hurt me? Like, I just had this very dark afternoon where I laid in the dark, and I just asked myself the question again and again, and again and again, what came up for me is he didn't. Yes, he was totally inappropriate. Yes, he was the worst. Yes, he hopefully didn't hurt other kids, but he probably did, but he didn't hurt me. And I came to that truth by opening myself up completely to the experience instead of being scared of what I was going to find. So I do think that's a really important part of this, to just open ourselves to experience without just judging what might arise. Does that resonate with anyone?
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome. And, you know, I hope that helps, because, you know, I always want to help as much as possible, but it's hard when it's your own experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. By the way, I want to say it does resonate with me. I was muted briefly. But that absolutely.
That kind of caps off of something she said there at the end of page 37. You said, Nicole, there's nothing without safety except pain. You mentioned that at the end of page 37 in your book there, and that struck me when I heard it. There's nothing without safety except pain. And then I believe this is your very next sentence. It says, you hold the key to every jail in which you sit. And it's pretty powerful. But anyway, it kind of caps off what you've been saying there. Forrest?
It's a great quote, and an interesting question, because so many of us do say, you know, you do the journaling and you come up with a lot of stuff, or however it is that you do your exploration, and how do you know when you have found the big deal? I also kind of wanted to talk a little bit about happiness, so I thought I would start with a quote. You write that happiness is not a permanent state of being. Happiness exists in moments. It is a byproduct of the kind of freedom which needs only exist in mind and spirit. And I was just wondering if you could talk about that. I think happiness, I'm a big fan of the rage-soothe ratio that Dr. Sarno talks about. And happiness just seems an important thing that we need to get into our lives, even when we're experiencing this excruciating pain in the process of healing. And I was just wondering if you could tell us about that.
Well, that's a great question, because it actually coincides with, I think, Eric's, one of you brought up expectations. And I think happiness just goes hand in hand with the problem in our society about expectations, because the youngest kids, you could say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And if they think they're pleasing you, they'll probably say, I just want to be happy. There's no such thing as being happy. Just like there's thankfully no such thing as being sad or being anything. The best I can give to people is you can be at peace. You could be okay with who you are and with your life, but you're not going to be happy all the time. I mean, for God's sakes, it's impossible. And if there were such a state as happiness, then what would it ever be compared to? How could you even know you were happy if you weren't sad? You know, I mean, there needs to be a yin and yang for anything. And so I think that what strikes people and what really hurts people is they think, I need to be happy. And then when they're not, or they have a week or a month or a period of depression or a disappointment in their career or their family, or, you know, they were expecting to have the job and they didn't get offered the job, or they were expecting to have a child and they have fertility problems, or they were expecting, there's a million things. They say, oh my goodness, I'm not happy. I'm not a happy person. And then there's like a zillion judgments that even get piled on there. What's wrong with me? I should be happy. Shoulds, all the shoulds. What I like to talk, you know, when I get down to truth, what I like to say to people is, listen, you are who you are. Let's find out. Who are you? I invite you to tell me who you are. And once I know who you are, we can decide what makes you happy. We can decide what brings you sadness, despair, or whatever. But we're not going to expect you to stand up or measure up to any of those things. I just want to know you. And that's the question that we all need to ask into ourselves. Hey there. Even though your dad might not have wanted to, or your mom, or your cousin, or that asshole at the dinner table when you were 12, I want to know you. I want to gracefully, kindly know you. And that is something that can start the road to great number of happy moments. I choose happy moments. My God, who doesn't? You know, I mean, I want to look to my children. And there's also, once you get to a certain level of truth, the ability to choose happy moments. I mean, I'll be honest with you today. I had work all day. At 5, my work ended, and I went to pick up my kids. Then they wanted Panera. Then we went through the Panera drive-thru, and it took forever. Then we got home, and everybody ate because the middle girl didn't want Panera. The baby wanted Panera. My older son wanted Panera. Then it's time to take a bath. Now I bathe everyone. Then Tiffany's driving back from BWI Airport. Okay, so this is just my day. I literally had a moment where my kids were like, blah, 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 at the dinner table. It was so annoying. And I was like, I have a choice. I can enjoy this moment or not. I know I'm working later. I know blah, 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 blah. And I said, I'm going to enjoy it. And I pulled out a chair and I sat down with them at the table and I said, here's what's funny about what you just said. And I started telling them a story and I had them laughing. But that's a choice I made. I don't make that choice every day. Sometimes I'm like, and I go like, hide upstairs. Shut up. You know, I mean, I'm not perfect by any stretch, but happiness is the same. Happiness is moments. And we can't expect to be forever happy, or else that's forever TMS. Because what's wrong with me?
Or heavily medicated.
One or the other. Sometimes I wish I was heavily medicated.
All right. Awesome. Does anybody got a question? Or want to elaborate on what Nicole just said about happiness? This is getting good, guys. We got about 10 more minutes.
For Forrest.
Work with me, people. She's saying work with me, people. Says it on her coffee cup.
Yeah, and we're almost done. We only have a few more minutes. Come on, guys. Anything? I'm trying to think. I mean, like I said, I wrote the book. I've read it a million times. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I want to bring up. But if you guys bring something up first, I'd prefer that.
Well, I'll go ahead. This is Ellen again. But going back to the idea of expectations, I think what happens after a while is that you just don't want to be disappointed anymore, so you just don't do anymore. You know, you don't participate anymore. And perhaps that's kind of the start of depression or chronic fatigue or those kinds of things. What do you think about that?
Here's the problem. So let me see if I can frame this. You have an issue, whatever it is. And I don't want to ask you personally, I want to make it up. So like, if you say you just don't want to be disappointed anymore, am I correct in that?
Yeah.
Ellen? Okay.
Yes. Okay. Sure.
So here's the problem. And this is what I say about a lot of things. Even though you don't want to hear what that tree sounds like as it falls in the forest, I just don't want to be disappointed anymore. Okay. It crashes down because you're disappointed again, but you don't want to be disappointed anymore because neither do I, neither does he, her. Nobody wants to be, right? But you've just had it. You're just really tired and you don't want to fucking hear one more goddamn thing. And my problem with that is you're still disappointed. So what I want to say about that is that you're still disappointed. So not wanting to be disappointed anymore doesn't save you from TMS. If you want to be pain-free, specifically within the umbrella of TMS, which not every one of my clients has, but actually that's not true because everyone does. It's just in not ways that is ruining their life. But a lot of my clients do have it in ways that is ruining their life. You just need to acknowledge, I'm still disappointed. I'm still hurting. What happened today that, you know, with blah, blah, still hurt my feelings. What happened today with my daughter still crushed me. What happened today, what my husband said before he left the house, it still broke my soul. But I'm going to go on. I'm just going to acknowledge that it really freaking hurt me instead of saying, it's fine, everything's fine. Because when we do that, that's when we hurt and then we have to deal with the BS that somebody put upon us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Because that's a huge deal with people recovering from TMS is that they can't stand one more thing, so they just stop thinking about it. But then the tree is crashing down 100 times a day. They don't think about it, so it's like, ow, my head, ow, my elbow, ow, my neck, ow, my back, ow, my stomach, ow, my everything. And then they have to deal with that in addition to whatever it is that upset them. But, and this is where the brain, this is total straight-up Sarno, this is where the brain comes and saves you, is that it's easier to go to an MRI appointment than it is to deal with the disappointment that continues to plague you about your family member who you can't get rid of. So you go to the MRI appointment and then you call your friend and you're like, I had to go to the MRI appointment. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. That sucks for you. Instead of, I'm not caring for my dying mother one more second. I'm fucking done. So that's the difference. Because that's the second thing I said, what people aren't willing to say to one another. Sorry, I know I'm like really, really out there, but that's the whole point of the book.
No, it's great. Thank you. That's great.
Well, Nicole, let me see if I can ask this a little farther. I'm being the devil's advocate. you know, those moments where I remember hearing, you know, expectations are just disappointments waiting to happen. And I remember feeling, throwing up my hands, going, what the hell does that mean? Does that mean I just let my children go run feral and I, you know, anarchy? but finding that, and I know with what I'm reading, learning not to be attached to outcome, living in the moment and practicing mindfulness, how do you work that out with, yeah, you will pick up your freaking shoes when you walk in the door, you know, be it dealing with kids or in a retail situation where you've got the, you know, like if, when I get good service somewhere, I'll usually go find a manager and say, you know, I got really great service, you know, so that was a bunny trail. But how do you do that? I mean, this detached thing, it's not like we're these disembodied things floating around, not attached to outcome on anything.
Don't be attached to outcome. With whom am I speaking?
This is North Star.
Hi, North Star. I just know I'm speaking with you and Ellen, but it doesn't come up who. Okay, North Star. I want to amend your... Well, I don't want to amend your thoughts. I want to amend what I believe about what you just said, because I don't believe not to be attached to outcome. Here's what I believe. Tell yourself the truth. So I'll paint a picture for you. What age children are we talking about in the retail store?
Teenagers.
Okay. So are we shopping and they're being rude to the clerk? What can teenagers do that's annoying in a retail store, because I don't have them yet?
Well, I've got them in my house. So, huh? I mean, I've got them in my house. So there's that dance between expectations versus what hill do you want to die on?
Got it.
You can be battling these little darlings from the time the sun sets to, you know, 24/7.
So. Okay. I understand your question. So let's bring it to your house, not the retail store, because I want to really answer it. Okay. So now we've got kids, we've got teenage children in a house, and they're being disrespectful, or they're not picking up their room, or they're not being polite, or they're not doing their chores. Is that covering enough?
Perfect. Yep.
Got it. Okay. Here's what I say. I want you to be attached to outcomes. No offense, but wherever you read that, which was not my book.
And that wasn't for parenting, by the way. That was just more with... just the I want to be happy sort of things, and doing things for the joy of doing things, not because you're going to get fame and fortune from it. So
similar to expectations.
Similar to that, but not quite. It's not quite that. So I'm glad you asked for clarification on that.
Okay, so here's what I want to say. Remember at the beginning of this call how Forrest said, so is it about we have to love and accept ourselves for who we are? And I said that's chapter 9 and we're on chapter 2.
Yeah.
Not being attached to expectations, it's not yet. It's later. So the first thing we need to do is get attached to truth. So you're sitting around your house and your kids are being assholes and they're not listening to you and they're disappointing you. And your expectations, which you should have, by the way, are that they're going to be respectful to you, in my opinion. This is just, I'm talking parent to parent now, not necessarily therapist, even though therapist isn't everything I say. So here's what I say. Let me give you an example, because I don't have teenagers. Okay, my son, he's a pain in the ass eater. He comes up to a meal, and I'm pretty cool about it. He asked for what he's been served, and he's like, I can't do it. I can't eat it. I'm not going to eat it. Okay, so he starts to cry. This is 2 years old, but it happened, and now he's going to be 10 next month, this month. So... the first time, second time, maybe when he was really little, because he did have a childhood, not an eating disorder, like an actual physical disorder where he couldn't swallow properly. So I was cool about it for years. But once I figured out that it was manipulative, I looked at him and I said, all right, well, you're not crying about it here, so go downstairs. You can cry about it there. And he went downstairs and he screamed and he cried and he hit the floor and he disturbed everybody at the table. And I walked downstairs. And I didn't beat him up, which is what I wanted to do. I held him up, and I looked him in the face, and I said, you will not be disturbing the family with this behavior. And for every minute that I hear it, you will be punished by taking away something that you love. And you decide. And he carried on for quite a bit, and he got punished. But what I'm trying to say is, while I was doing that, I was like, I freaking hate you. I can't stand you for one more second. I didn't say it. I thought it, though. instead of the shoulds. I shouldn't feel that way about my child. Oh, he's just a baby. I shouldn't think this of him. Oh, well, he was ill as an infant. I shouldn't even feel this way. No, I was like, tell yourself the truth. So you could be sitting there, North Star, in your house, and your kids could be disrespecting you, and you could be like, you know what? I've done everything I can do. I've laid down the rules. They're breaking the rules. I've set up good boundaries. I've set up good understanding of boundaries. I've set up good expectations of what they think will happen, and they're still breaking them. And you could sit on your couch reading your magazine going, I fucking hate you. Not to them. To you. This is to be truthful to ourselves, to understand that we don't have to be victim to what other people tell us we need to be. It doesn't mean you go crazy on everybody. It means stop lying to yourself. You can't stand them right now. You wish they were never born. You wish they would get in the car and drive away and come back in a week. That's okay, because that's the kind of thing that helps us deal with our painful expectations. Does that make sense? It's slightly different.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's good stuff. It's kind of like what you were saying before about dealing with your own shit, so it doesn't become you're putting it on your kid.
Perfect.
Really a dance. It's just a constant dance where you're.
Yeah,
especially
and it's
when
exhausting.
You have this behavior model,
you
and you're feeling your way around, going, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I've never parented teenagers before.
That's right.
So yeah, that's really good stuff. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I just want to end that thought, because I know we're going to wrap up soon, with be your own best friend. You know, you don't always have to be everybody else's, but instead of being only kind and gentle to others, try to do that for you a little bit. And I think that goes hand in hand with accepting our truths.
What a great thought to wrap up on. We'll do a final call for any follow-up questions. We can answer additional questions later on, but just based on what was just said. I would very much like to thank all of our question askers. I think it's great when we get a wide variety of voices in here. I think it breaks things up nicely. So thank you, Ellen and North Star, for contributing your experiences and your questions and your thoughts. And of course, many, many thanks.
I got one sentence. It's not a question.
Let's hear it.
And this wraps up everything that Nicole just said. I mean, you know, on the surface, in truth, we can handle anything. And basically, that's what she's saying. It goes a lot deeper than that, but that's what she said on page 40, and I just wanted to wrap it up with that. In truth, guys, we can handle anything, and this is where we'll go from there, and that's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Beautiful thought. So thank you, Herbie. Thank you for everyone who called in. This is got quite the list, and we will see you again next week. Shall we do two more chapters, Nicole?
Yeah, that's great.
I think that was great. I think we want to jump right in so we can get to the real meat of it and have some tools to work with. So let's do that, and talk to you all next week.